You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Thursday, the 19th of January. Moving on through the year. My pleasure to be with you this morning. It is a Thursday, which of course means our good friend Father Alan Carter will be on during the second hour today. We're going to be talking about the priesthood, particularly the ministerial priesthood, which of course Father Alan, having had hands laid on his head, is a part of, the ministerial priesthood, which exists to serve the common priesthood of the faithful, which is all those of us who've been baptized. The first reading today in particular, I thought it was a very appropriate topic from the letter to the Hebrews, talking about Christ the great high priest. Christ is the priest in which all other priests find their identity and meaning, whether the ministerial priesthood or the common priesthood of the faithful. And so we'll talk to Father Alan a little bit about that. What does it mean for his priesthood, and also for our priesthood, to be caught up in the capital P priest, the high priest, Jesus Christ? We'll also talk about that in light of the liturgy. One of the things I think that boggles the mind, and there's so much about the Catholic faith that's like this, it really requires this Catholic imagination to be able to understand that there are realities far beyond that visible to our senses. We'll talk about the Mass itself, the sacred liturgy, because one of the beautiful assertions of the Church is that when we come together for Mass, and believe me, I understand if you get bored in Mass. I mean, that's human nature. We come together in Mass, we are actually participating in something so much bigger, so much higher, so much more glorious than we could ever possibly imagine, because what we are doing is we are participating in some mystical way in the heavenly liturgy, which Christ is celebrating in the true tabernacle, not made from bricks or mortar, but in the heavens. And so we'll talk to Father Alan a little bit about that too, because I think, you know, as it's all been said, and I can't remember, it may have been Chesterton who said something like this, the problem with being bored in Mass is not so much that Mass is boring, it's that we're boring and that we lack the proper faith-filled imagination to see what's really going on. So we'll talk to Father Alan about that in the second hour. That'll be a good conversation indeed. Some other things I want to talk about today. The president-elect of the United States, and we'll only be able to say that for one more day because tomorrow Donald J. Trump will be inaugurated as the 45th president of the United States, the first Twitter fiend in chief. And I want to talk a little bit about a dynamic that I'm noticing regarding the Trump presidency, particularly those who are all in on the Trump bandwagon. Now, there is a degree to which we're all in, right? I mean, we're all American. If you're an American citizen or if you live in this country, I mean, Donald J. Trump is going to be your president. He's just as if no matter how you felt about Barack Obama, he was your president. But there's a certain dynamic in that I'm seeing in some segments, particularly segments among people of faith, that I think somehow is related to, if you've ever heard the term machismo, in terms of this sort of almost exaggerated masculinity. And there, I'm seeing parallels, at least in my mind, to the 1993 Joel Schumacher film starring Michael Douglas called Falling Down. I don't know if you remember this, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but I'm seeing some connections. And I'm not sure what to make of it, particularly from the perspective of the faith. So we'll talk about that. Basically, the POTUS, that's the president-elect of the United States, the POTUS, machismo, and falling down. We'll also talk about the mystery of the messianic secret from the Gospel of Mark, partisanship and persuasion, and a dying wish of William Peter Blatty, probably the last day we talk about exorcist author William Peter Blatty for a while, but something that's worth noting indeed. If you want to be a part of the show today, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. In the next segment, I'll give you the question of the day, which is NFL-related, just so you know. My mind this morning is going to a passage from 2 Corinthians 12. You know, I was talking to my class at school yesterday. We do a thing in my New Testament class for seniors in high school. We do a thing on Wednesdays that they look forward to. We call it Question Wednesday. What happens is at the beginning of the semester, I give them all two slips of paper and say, I want you to write two questions. Write them about any topic. They can be faith-related. They can be non-faith-related. Hopefully they're interesting questions, thoughtful questions. And what we'll do is I'll take them up, you know, fold them up. We'll put them in a cup. And every Wednesday for the semester, I'll draw out three of those questions and we'll talk about them. Now, they like it primarily because, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. They like it because it kills time in their mind from regular classwork, note-taking, and all the rest. But, it can be kind of fun, particularly if they ask good questions. But one of the questions they asked yesterday is, what is your favorite Bible passage or verse? And, of course, sort of forced to think on my feet a little bit. It's hard to narrow it down, It's kind of like being asked which one of your children is your favorite. And so, I mentioned Psalm 8, which I love, which begins, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. You've set your glory above the heavens. And I talked about the value of knowing Scripture, of having it tucked away so that, as you never know when you may not have access to a Bible. You may be in a situation where you need to draw Scripture to mind to help shape and form your thinking. And this kind of case in point for me this morning is my mind has drifted to St. Paul's second letter to the church in Corinth, Chapter 12. And it's some remarks that St. Paul makes that really should shoot a hole in any sort of notion of what we might call prosperity theology. You hear this sometimes. In fact, I think that one of the main evangelical Pentecostal speakers at the inauguration tomorrow, Paula White is her name, is one of these in the same mold as maybe a Joel Osteen and others, whose basic message is that God's will for you, not just his permissive will, but his direct, specific will for you is prosperity in all aspects of life. And if you're not experiencing it, it's because your faith needs to grow. And the stronger your faith, the less suffering that you will experience. But any honest reading of the New Testament, particularly when you read the Gospels and Jesus talks about what it means to be his disciple, taking up your cross, following him. Now, don't sanitize the cross as we've kind of in some ways done over 2,000 years and centuries and miles removed from that brutal instrument of torture that the Romans used not only to punish would-be rebels, but to send a strong message of what it meant to, pun intended, cross them. Now, to carry one's cross is to embrace with Christ suffering as a path to redemption. I heard a great line from Mark Hart, who's, I think, he does a great job, a well-known Catholic speaker. He was talking about Jesus on the cross, and he said, Jesus didn't suffer so we wouldn't have to. Jesus suffered so we would know how to. And so whatever suffering you're going through, and, I'd ask for your prayers because our family's going through some difficulties, some suffering. And I'll be honest with you, there's a part of me when I go through that I feel a spiritual desolation. I kind of go all Yukon Cornelius. You know who I'm talking about? You know, Yahoo! In the old claymation, Rudolph the Red-Nosed, he throws his pickaxe up in the air. He's looking for gold, silver. It comes down. He licks it and then says nothing. You ever kind of feel like that spiritually? Like, you know, you're baby stepping, you're doing the program to bring another cinematic connection. What about Bob, anyone? Anyway, you throw the pickaxe, you know, you spiritually, you're like, I got nothing. I think of St. Paul in 2 Corinthians 12. He says in this passage, therefore, to keep me from being too elated, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from being too elated. Three times I appealed to the Lord about this, that it would leave me. Three times. St. Paul, God allows him in his permissive will to be persecuted, to suffer through the work of the devil, a thorn in his flesh. Three times he appealed to the Lord, three times. So much for prosperity theology that it would leave him. But he said to me, the Lord, Jesus, I would assume, he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I'm weak, then I am strong. So wherever you are today, if you're having, maybe like me, a little bit of a Yukon Cornelius morning, nothing. His grace is all we need. And he will provide an insufficient supply. We'll be back with the question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on Breadbox Media, if you want to learn more about what we do, go to breadboxmedia.com. We kind of need some help right now, helping encourage others to download the app, for example, if they have a smartphone so they can have Breadbox Media in their pocket. Tell other people. Maybe if you use social media, use the hashtag Breadbox Media to draw attention. We're also asking for folks who appreciate the programming here, whether it's this show or all of our various contributors across the country on the weekdays or on the weekends. If there's something that you appreciate about Breadbox Media, it's meant something to you, and you are willing to film yourself in like a 30-second or less little endorsement of Breadbox Media or one particular show, we're going to put together a montage of that sort of thing as we go on trying to promote and increase the awareness of Breadbox Media out there. So if you're willing to do that, we would really appreciate it. You can send it my way via email. Just attach that WMV file, video file, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Or if you've got more questions, just shoot me an email, and I'll get answers to those questions. MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Again, anything you could do to help would be great. As I also said on the website, you can find a podcast of your favorite shows. You can even subscribe through Google Play, Podbean, or iTunes. You can also become a friend of your favorite show if you so desire. My question of the day, we are heading into the Final Four weekend of the NFL playoffs. Some have commented that this may be the finest collection of four remaining Super Bowl quarterbacks, four remaining quarterbacks that we've ever had. If you think about it, you've got three Super Bowl winning quarterbacks in Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, and Aaron Rodgers. And then you also have this year's NFL MVP the Atlanta Falcons quarterback, Matt Ryan. No slouch himself. So my question, though, has to do with Tom Brady. I mean, here's Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game yet again. It's interesting. Today is the 15th anniversary of the famous Tuck Rule game. If you don't remember this, this was, of course, this was the NFL season, which was the same year as the 9-1-1 horrible Twin Tower attacks and all the rest. And so it ended up being this great Cinderella story that the New England Patriots, of all teams, the Patriots, defeated the heavily favored greatest show on turf St. Louis Rams to win their first Super Bowl. And there was a guy who had come in his first playoff experience late that year to replace Drew Bledsoe by the name of Tom Brady. You may have heard of him. Anyway, this was 15 years ago today, the Tuck Rule game against the Raiders, where Brady was basically stripped of the ball, but under the rules at the time, it was considered to be an incomplete pass. Actually, ended up causing a change in the rules. If this had happened today, it would have been a fumble. Of course, the thing is, had that been ruled a fumble and the Raiders recover it, the Patriots very likely do not win that Super Bowl. Super Bowl 36, I guess it was. And so it's an interesting story with Tom Brady because he's won four Super Bowls, which puts him in elite company with only Terry Bradshaw and Joe Montana. But all of the Super Bowls have been close. You had the first one here in which he almost didn't make it. And then you had the, of course, Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl, which if Pete Carroll, talk about your what were you thinking moments, if Pete Carroll had simply given the ball to Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, Brady'd be 3-3 in Super Bowls, and there might be a little bit of a different narrative. So my question today is, do you think Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of the Super Bowl era? And if not him, then who? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. To me, it's kind of tough to argue against it. I mean, the guy's in 15 years, I guess you could say, this is his 16th year as a starter. In 15 prior years, he's been to six Super Bowls, and I think over half of those years, he's been to the AFC Championship game. It really is an amazing record. Now, you could say, well, Bradshaw and Montana were undefeated in Super Bowls. Yeah, but they only played in four. They didn't play in six. And Brady, I would argue, for the most part, has done it with far less talent at the wide receiver position than either of those four-time Super Bowl champions. So to me, it's kind of hard to argue against the idea that Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of the Super Bowl era. My friend John says, tough to answer. This is on Facebook. Tough to answer objectively because offense evolves. Brady's passing concepts don't exist without Montana and to a lesser extent, Jim Kelly's K-gun philosophy. But no one is putting him in this discussion. Yeah, because Jim Kelly, of course, 0-4 in Super Bowls. How can you objectively compare Brady with Bart Starr? He says. They barely played the same sport. Well, there's probably some truth there. John trying to be the voice of reason. NFL.com, one of their writers, tried to rank the top 10 quarterbacks of the Super Bowl era. And they had number one, Tom Brady. Number two, Joe Montana. Number three, John Elway. Elway, who went to, I think, five Super Bowls, did go 2-3, but won his last two. Number four, Aaron Rodgers. The writer here says, as talented a quarterback as I've ever watched, better than his immediate predecessor in Green Bay, Brett Favre, and better than Peyton. If Rodgers can catch a couple of breaks and his receivers don't fail to catch passes like they did versus the Giants in the divisional round in 2011 or so forth over the next decade, the sky is the limit. I think if Aaron Rodgers comes in and wins the Super Bowl this year, he's certainly in the top five, in my opinion. The guy's just, he's fun to watch. So if you got a comment on that, we'd love to hear you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Other sports news, Cooperstown announcing Hall of Fame selections yesterday. And I still regret driving through upstate New York about 15 years ago, 17 years ago, I think it was, on my way to Maine with my family. And I drove right past the exit to Cooperstown. Baseball Hall of Fame. I would have had some grumbling small children, no doubt, but I should have done that while I had the chance. Anyway, but three new members of the Hall of Fame, Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, Jeff Bagwell, Houston Astros slugger, and Tim Raines. Tim Raines in his last opportunity to get in. Tim Raines, who, as I heard Bob Costas talking about yesterday, Tim Raines' only curse was being the second best leadoff hitter of his generation. The best, of course, Ricky Henderson, who is an all-time great himself. But a lot of people happy to see Tim Raines. It's a little bit of a nod to the sabermetric idea of on-base percentage, because Tim Raines always high on getting on base, which is what you want to lead off hitter to do. I think I've bought fully into my friend Jason Hall's point that as a hitter, just about the best thing you can do is not get out. And Tim Raines was just about as good as anybody in his generation at not getting out when he's up to the plate, which reminds me of my little bit of a man crush, Joey Votto, for the Cincinnati Reds, who is 12th all-time in on-base percentage and tops among active players. So don't sneeze at it. Of course, a lot of people talking about the inclusion of Bagwell and Rodriguez, both of whom were names that were whispered to be associated with PED issues, though neither one officially implicated in that. But maybe there's beginning to be a bit of a thaw in terms of the principled refusal to induct anyone associated in any way with steroids or PEDs. So we'll see whether that same mercy trickles on down to Barry Bonds and others who have gained, and Roger Clemens in particular, who are evidently are still, who are slowly gaining some votes, maybe a feeling like, you know, not being a first, second, or third ballot Hall of Famer is kind of made the point. Now let's go ahead and get them in the hall, because they would have been in the hall had they never touched the stuff. Meanwhile, P. Rose is saying, what about me? Let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We'll sneak in whatever we can here before the break. Again, if you've got your own 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, you got your own nominee, we'd love to hear it. But go dumb or go home, as we like to say. First, we're going to give to a woman in Great Britain, I guess, who is basically homeless. It won't work because she's waiting on royalties from the Michael Jackson song Smooth Criminal, which she says was based on her. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the Carly Simon, you know, You're So Vain. I bet you think the song is about you. She's been asking for compensation. Her daughter says, my mother just needs to get a job and quit holding out for royalties. I need to come up with something like that. You know, maybe what's a song I could say was really about me? Maybe Same Old Lang Syne by Dan Fogelberg. I don't know that I've finished any six packs off in the car on Christmas Eve, though, with old high school flames. We'll be back in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. We got a couple more. One more nominee and a winner when we come back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Got a football opinion? Love to hear from you. Tom Brady. As much as I can't stand him and don't want him to win the Super Bowl, I have to tip my hat and say, you know, he's, I think, the greatest quarterback of the Super Bowl era. Do you agree? I haven't asked Alex yet. Alex, you agree? Brady, the greatest in the Super Bowl era? He's nodding his head. And I think he, like me, it brings him no great joy to say that. But you got to give credit where credit's due. Of course, the perennial question is, and I'm not sure that we'll ever know fully the answer. Well, yeah, we probably will after Brady retires, if Darth Vader himself, Bill Belichick, the master of the hoodie, if he continues on. Did Brady make Belichick or did Belichick make Brady? And the cop-out answer on that is to say both. And there may be some truth there. But I think that is an open question because, you know, Brady's been out a few times and Patriots haven't done bad under some kind of no-name backups. So I think it's a little bit of an open question. Brady, who was, what, a sixth-round draft pick out of the University of Michigan. No one saw this coming. So anyway, your thoughts on that, shoot them my way. If you want, you can text me, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or Twitter. Bonnie email says, I love Eli! Exclamation point. I will say this. I mean, when it comes to clutch quarterbacks in the big game, the lights are on. Super Bowl. It's pretty tough to beat Eli, who beat Brady both times in their two Super Bowl matchups. So, yeah, Eli Manning, no doubt. Think about, you know, it all depends on which Eli Manning shows up. Good Eli or bad Eli? 573-4BREAD-4, call or text. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Anyway, back to our What Were You Thinking nominees. We've got a second one here, Go Dumb or Go Home. I like this one. Man attempts to burglarize. I can't remember if I shared this one before. It's just part of problems of old age. Man attempts to burglarize Florida spy shop that sells surveillance cameras. You know, if you're going to rob a store, don't rob a store that specializes in surveillance. Of course, he was. His failed attempt was caught on several cameras. No word on whether he's yet been captured. As store manager Evan Tannenbaum told WSVN in Miami, this is probably the last place you would want to try to burglarize. We've got a whole bunch of surveillance cameras. We've got hidden cameras. We also do GPS tracking devices and audio recording devices. Wow. But the winner, we're going to give the winner of the award, right? Let the music play from the hilltops. Be thankful in this case it's not you doing something dumb. I'm going to give the winner to Selena Gomez, the young, aspiring singer, actress, Disney Channel veteran, who is now dating, officially, evidently, The Weeknd. I guess the only reason I know this is one of the people I follow on Twitter. I don't know why I even follow the guy. Some sort of gossip paparazzi person. Anyway, Selena Gomez is dating The Weeknd. So my only question is, I mean, when you date The Weeknd, what are your conversations like? What do you call him? Do you shorten it to The? Do you call him by his given name? A TW? That's got to be some odd conversations. I mean, does the, would it be, could you just shorten it to Weeknd? Hey, Weeknd. Or, hey, The. Hey, T-Dub. Hey, The Weeknd. That would get a little cumbersome. So that's, we're going to give it to Selena Gomez. Deep stuff. This is why I get the big bucks, to bring that stuff before you. Anyway, of course, as we've talked about, tomorrow, the day of the inauguration of the President of the United States, Donald Trump yesterday tweeting a picture of himself that he says was from his winter White House. You know, I guess, you know, the Pope has his summer residence. Why not the president having a winter White House at Mar-a-Lago
And he's sitting there looking all serious. He's sitting there at a desk, a very clear and empty desk, with a legal pad and what looks like some kind of a pen. As if he's getting ready. I mean, is he really writing out his inauguration address longhand? Really? It's kind of funny. So that as somebody mentioned to me yesterday, this will probably get one of the highest ratings of any inauguration. I just think there is a little bit of the element of disbelief there for people as they watch it unfold. And, you know, I suggested yesterday on Twitter that maybe if you're prone to this sort of thing, you want to do a drinking game, then you could you could play the drinking game and basically take a swig every time Donald Trump says some particular words. And I kind of asked that question yesterday. You know, what are some of the words that, you know, besides great, fantastic, CNN? Will he call out CNN in his inauguration address? What are some of the things that that might make it an interesting drinking game? And I got some responses. Let me see if I can find them on here, what people said they look forward to. Believe me was another one. It's going to be fantastic, believe me. Laura says, wrong, exclamation point. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Richard says, lightweight, loser, and winning. I mean, will he really actually say the word loser in his inaugural address? How about sad? Sad. Steve says China and Mexico. Timothy says the wall. Davis says many, many, many. Of course, some other people have said huge. let's see. Terrible and huge. Really, really tremendous, another word, and disaster. Yeah, that's a good one. It's a disaster. I've been thinking more and more about Donald Trump. I got some friends on Facebook who are all in on the Trump train. Now, as I said, I fully acknowledge he's legitimately elected. I will pray for my president. He is my president. I'm very concerned. My concerns have not abated, by the way, in the transition. I know we keep hearing, give him a chance. And I understand that, but somebody's also got to hold him accountable. I happen to think that his presidency is going to be a disaster. But what I kind of discover among, believe me, as I said before, I voted for neither major party candidate in this election. Couldn't bring myself to do it. But I know there are those, and certainly I respect your right and your own conscience and discernment. There were those who voted for Donald Trump. Felt like, you know what, I can't stomach the idea of a Hillary Clinton presidency. For some of you, it was issues related to abortion, and you know, you felt like she would be all in on abortion and against religious liberty. In much the same way, you know, some of the same attacks on religious liberty that we've seen from the Obama administration, particularly taking on the Little Sisters of the Poor and so forth. And so Hillary Clinton was the worst possible candidate. And so Donald Trump, there were those who said, you know, I acknowledge he's far from a perfect candidate. He is, he's somebody that has a lot of issues and problems that I have a lot of deep concerns, but I feel like he's the lesser of two evils. But what's amazing to me is how quickly that has transitioned with some, once he was elected, to an almost unqualified celebration and endorsement of his presidency and everything he does, and a complete unwillingness to acknowledge that he's said some things, done some things that should at least raise an eyebrow or two. But again, it's this partisan climate we live in. If we give any sort of quarter to the opposition, then we've lost. And so rather than really do the only thing that, the only persons who can hold the president to account are those in his own party. Because in this hyper-partisan world we live in, all of the opposition party are simply going to be shouted down. And it would be just the same way if Hillary Clinton and be elected. But here's the thing that gets me, that I notice, is that there is a real sense among some, of at least of my friends on social media, of a of an almost, you know, Trump's going to stick it to the liberals. He's going to stick it to the left. Here, watch this press conference in which he just lets the media have it. Trump has a pair. That's what you hear, quite honestly. And so for some who cloaked their vote in, well, this is the lesser of two evils, for some, the mask has come off and it's apparent that they didn't vote for Trump in spite of Trump. They voted for Trump because of Trump. I have a friend who posted a link to an article, this from townhall.com. Obama fades away as Trump laughs at his enemies. This guy is a fellow Catholic, devout in his faith, posted this link. I'll talk about what I think's behind some of that when we come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Again, my question of the day. You can chime in on social media if you want, Facebook or Twitter. Do you think Tom Brady, going into the Final Four weekend, again in the AFC Championship game, hosted in Foxborough against the Steelers? Man, that should be a slobber knocker. Anyway, Tom Brady, who is odds on the favorite. Let me look at that really quick going into the weekend, because 538.com, which is my favorite stat geek website, every week has, and they've done this through particular statistics, right? Which team has the greatest chance of winning Super Bowl 60? And so right now what they have is, of the four teams remaining, New England has a 43% chance of winning Super Bowl 60. Atlanta, surprisingly, coming in at number two with a 25% chance. I'm a little worried about Atlanta's defense. I mean, they'll certainly be tested by Aaron Rodgers. Number three, they have Green Bay at 16%, and Pittsburgh in last place at 15%. So my question is, do you think Tom Brady is the best quarterback of the Super Bowl era? You can call or text 573-4BREAD-4. You can post on social media, Facebook or Twitter, email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Let's see, really. Tom Brady or maybe Trent Dilfer. It's close between those two, wouldn't you say? Anyway, before we get back to the Trump inauguration and the dynamic I was talking about before the break, let's look back in history just a little bit, see what some other things that have happened January 19th throughout the ages. 1736, James Watt, the inventor of the steam engine, born in Scotland. 1807, Robert E. Lee was born in Stratford, Virginia. My dad went to an elementary school here in Lexington where we broadcast from. It was called Lynn Lee Elementary. In true Kentucky Civil War neutrality fashion, an elementary school named for both Abraham Lincoln and Robert E. Lee. Happy birthday to the author Edgar Allan Poe, the writer of dark stories. Interestingly enough, even though he himself not Catholic, had an affection for Our Lady. Let's see, in 1943, Janis Joplin, she would be 74 years old today. Of course, she died at the age of 27, part of that unfortunate 27 Club. It's Dolly Parton's birthday today, 71 years old, the queen of Sevierville, Tennessee. I'm an unabashed Dolly Parton fan, easily my favorite female country singer of all time. Let's see, the first episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show filmed in 1961. I'm going to make an embarrassing admission. I've never seen an episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show. Let's see, the 1971, 46 years ago, the Beatles' Helter Skelter is played at the Charles Manson trial. Born in the USA in 1985, peaked at number 9. Believe it or not, did not reach number 1. In 2001, 16 years ago, in a deal sparing himself possible indictment, President Bill Clinton acknowledged for the first time making false statements under oath about Monica Lewinsky. He also surrendered his law license for 5 years. So that's a little run through history. As I said, 15 years ago, the famous Tuck Rule game, in which Tom Brady was able to win in overtime after a very controversial, to put it mildly, call against the Raiders in a snowstorm. Anyway, we were talking a little bit before the break about Donald Trump and this sense among some Donald Trump supporters, and of course their support will find its consummation, its appointed fruition tomorrow with the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States. He is evidently, according to reports, his inaugural address is going to be somewhat short. Will it leave us any memorable lines, in the same vein as "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country"? What will the Trump lines be? One of the things I've noted is that among those who say they voted for Donald Trump, and here in this state of Kentucky where I live, certainly he won this state handily. So I know a lot of people who voted for him. Some, particularly among Catholics, voted for him, they said, not because they thought he was a perfect candidate. Last I checked, Jesus wasn't on the ballot. But they voted for him because they saw him as the lesser of two evils. As I said, if you've made that conscientious decision, I can understand. I personally, in my own conscience, I couldn't vote for either major party candidate. But certainly if you, particularly maybe on the Supreme Court issue, you were concerned about the type of justices in a time that could be a time of great transition in the court, then I can respect that. And I mean that sincerely. What's been amazing to me, as I said, is that since his election, the number of people, number of Catholics, devout Catholics, who can barely contain their glee at the inauguration of Donald Trump tomorrow, as the great hope somehow of Christian civilization. Trump and Putin together, I guess. And part of the thing is that it really bothers me a little bit is this, what I think is this celebration of what they see in Donald Trump as a sort of machismo, a hyper-exaggerated caricature of masculinity. You know, you've gone from this sort of Spockian, professorial, a Barack Obama who was held captive, to all the FM leftist extremists. Now you've got Donald Trump ready to make things right. And there is a bit of this is where we discover those who voted not for Trump in spite of Trump, but voted for Trump because of Trump. They like the way he talks. They like the way he puts others down. They like the way he asserts himself. They see it, for want of a better word, as having a pair. Sorry for the graphic nature. And what it reminds me a little bit of, and this is what I'm struggling with reconciling this with the Christian faith. This spirit of vengeance, of laughing at our enemies. That it's not enough to win. We've got to ground the opposition into powder, and we've got to see our opponents politically as enemies. That's the kind of stuff. And it reminds me a little bit of the 1993 film Falling Down. You ever seen this movie? Kind of flew under the radar a little bit. Michael Douglas. He plays the lead role. He works for the Department of Defense. Laid off. He's got the short sleeve white dress shirt. He's got the black thin black glasses, the crew cut, the little tie. Carries a black briefcase. He's been let go from his job. His wife has left him. And he's had enough. He's had enough with multiculturalism. I mean, this was in 1993. He's had enough with what it feels like the odds are stacked against him. And he just kind of goes off. And you see different scenes, you know, where some people try to mug him and he gets tough with them. He goes into a convenience store and ransacks the place. He basically has a meltdown of sorts, and it's kind of been seen for many years as sort of the epitome of you know, the frustrated white male in a society that's changing around him. Yeah, I will say there is a part of it. I mean, anybody who watches a movie like this, and it doesn't have to just be Falling Down, any movie where somebody finally expresses and pays back frustration over mistreatment, there's a part of us inside, I'll be honest, I mean, this is just human nature. We find ourselves vicariously living through them. We find ourselves cheering them on internally. We love to see. Now, some of that is rooted, I think, in a legit desire for justice that's written into the human heart. But some of it bleeds over into a darker thing that I think we've got to be mindful of. I think some of that same spirit is at work in those who are all in, without question, on Donald Trump and find themselves enjoying his Twitter rants, his politics of personal destruction, because it's payback time for all those leftists and mealy-mouthed multiculturalists and all the rest. This is time for payback, and we can do it through Trump because Trump has a pair. He's willing to call it out. Oh, yeah, I say he said some degrading things about women. That's locker room talk. There's a bit of that, and I'm asking myself, how can we reconcile that spirit, which I think is a demonic spirit, I'll be honest with you. How do we reconcile that with our faith? That's what concerns me, right? It's this falling down parallel that I see. And those scenarios never end well, right? They never end well. Believe me, I don't mind seeing those on the left. I don't mind seeing the Meryl Streeps of the world upset after they fawned over in the other opposite direction for the last 8 years. But man, we need to temper this stuff. It's not good. I don't think it's Christian, I'll be honest with you. Anyway, if you've got a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4. We'll be back.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.